Let's go ahead and... Is it on? Let's go ahead and get started. Hope everybody was able to stretch your legs and get some water and certainly to fellowship. And I've had some folks come up to me and kind of express their own personal stories, and I'm thankful for those because, as I said earlier in the onset of this as we began, that's what we need to do. And because each person's grief experience is so unique to them, that's the best thing you can do, is to allow that person to express what they're feeling and certainly what they're going through. This next stage is probably a stage that everybody goes through in stage five. And again, these aren't necessarily in order because, again, people experience these in different ways and unique ways. But in stage five, we feel a sense of guilt about the loss. But we need to make a distinction between guilt because there's two types of guilt. There's normal guilt and there's neurotic guilt. Okay? So let me give you kind of the definitions of what normal and neurotic guilt is. Normal guilt is when we have done something or when we've neglected to do something that we feel guilty about. You know, when somebody asks us to do something perhaps at church and we forget, we got busy or something happens and we feel guilty about it. That's normal guilt. Or, you know, we needed to do something, but we just didn't feel like doing it. Later, we feel guilty about it. This is normal guilt. And many times in the loss of a loved one, we feel the normal guilt because we didn't say something to them. You know, I didn't say I loved you one more time, or perhaps I was angry with them, or, you know, whatever the case might be. This is a normal form of guilt. And it's normal for us in the grief process to feel guilty over something we said or that we didn't do or didn't say. Because we begin to go back and process that guilt, and we begin to go back and look over as we're traveling through these different stages of grief, and we think, well, could I have said something differently that, you know, could have impressed on them how much I love them or how much I cared about them? Or I feel guilty when Dad asked me to come over and mow the grass and he had to do it himself, and I didn't get to do it for him that one last time because he liked it when I helped him in the yard. That's normal guilt. And it's okay to feel those things. But the other type of guilt that is often associated with death is neurotic guilt. Okay? Neurotic guilt is feeling guilty all out of proportion to our own real involvement in the particular problem or that particular situation. Okay? Now let me explain to you what I mean by neurotic guilt. There's a lady who's sitting with her mother who's dying of cancer. And she's been in the hospital for several weeks now. And they've done chemo treatments and they've done all of these different types of medication and trying to help her. And finally she says, you know what? I'm done with it. I don't want to do this anymore. You know, let me just stay here in the hospital, enjoy my last few days with my family. So the daughter sits with her, and the daughter never leaves her side, and the daughter never takes a shower, and she won't even leave to go get something to eat because she wants to be there with her mother. And this has dragged on for several weeks now. And then finally the doctor comes in and says, look, you've got to get some rest. You know, we'll call you if anything happens. You've got to get some rest. Go home and grab you a quick bite to eat. Get you a shower. Put on some fresh clothes and then come back up. This is going to help you feel better. Well, in the process of going home, she gets the call that her mother died. And she wasn't there. Up until this point, she had been there for weeks, even a few months. She had never left her mother's side. Now when she left at that moment is when her mother passes away. And now she begins to think it was my fault. I'm the reason that she died. Had I just stayed there with her by her bedside, that wouldn't have happened and everything would be okay and I would still have her. That's neurotic guilt because you have no control over the situation. But we feel, and neurotic guilt many times kind of conforms and mushes together with normal guilt. But we feel as if we had done something differently, it would have made the outcome completely different. So we think back and said, man, I really wish I wouldn't have gone over there at that time and they wouldn't have got mad and drove off and things wouldn't have happened. Or if I'd only been there when they were sick and I could have helped them with their medication and they wouldn't have fallen and those things wouldn't have happened. So many of these things we play through our mind and we blame ourselves. It's my fault. It's my fault that it happened. So when this begins to happen, again, this is a matter of degree. You know, unresolved guilt and misunderstood emotions of this type can make us miserable for years. Because what we have to understand, as difficult as it is for us sometimes, because we feel we were the result or the cause of the particular situation is to let the guilt go. And in relation to our faith in being Christians, sometimes this is easy for us to understand, because when we think about that in relation to our sin, when we commit sin against God, sin, when we think about repentance, is the result of guilt. Because I feel guilty that I did something towards God to offend Him and to cause Him to be angry with me, there's that sorrow that the Bible talks about, right? For godly sorrow works repentance unto salvation, not to be repented of. So that sorrow that I understand is wrong. I know this is wrong, I shouldn't have done this. Repentance brings about the change of heart that causes the change of action to say, Lord, I know I shouldn't have done this. There's that immense amount of guilt that I'm carrying, and then what does God do? Wipes the slate clean. You don't have to worry about that sin anymore, Larry. I've taken care of it. That's what the blood of my son was for. All of those things are okay now. But when it's in relation to losing a loved one or losing something that we care about, maybe it's a marriage, maybe it's a relationship with a child, maybe you said something and shouldn't have said that, now they won't talk to you. Whatever the case is, in relation to neurotic guilt, you feel somewhere along the line, it was your problem. And it was my fault, and now because it's my fault, I'm never going to have that relationship again. I'm never going to see that person again. And that guilt will literally make your life miserable. So then the question is, how do I get over it? You have to face the guilt. You can't sidestep it. You can't get around it. You have to face the guilt head on. In that, many times what helps, and what I tell people, is to talk to somebody in the situation or within the family that understands the guilt that you're feeling, and let that person vent to you. Because what we have to do through our guilty process is that we need to express these feelings. We need to get all of these things off of our chest, just like emotions. So we've got to begin to express these ideas to say, well, was my fault? And because she was so sick and I was at the hospital, could I have really done anything? I mean, after all, the doctors tried all of this and none of those things seemed to help. And she just got sicker and she didn't even want chemo anymore. So maybe it wasn't my fault. And because now we begin to process the guilt and understanding there's nothing I could have done differently to change the outcome of the situation. And sometimes that takes a while to go through this process. Neurotic guilt is much more difficult to process than normal guilt. Because normal guilt, we just said, man, I wish I would have said, I love you one more time. You know, we all want one more chance or one more hug or whatever the case might be. But with the neurotic guilt, it's the feeling that I'm the reason they died. I'm the reason they walked away from this relationship. I'm the reason that we're no longer what we used to be. Whatever the case is, the neurotic guilt is there. But unless you process and you can get through it, you will be miserable and you will hang on to that guilt until the day you die. And then what good has it caused you? And what really begins to happen many times is people holding on to that neurotic guilt, it affects their other relationships. I'm not going to get any close to you because I'm afraid I'm going to cause this and I'm going to cause you to die. You know, every time I get around somebody, that, you know, I lose that relationship and I cause a friendship. So I'm just going to close down completely and I'm not going to have any relationships anymore because every time it happens, it's always my fault. That's a miserable way to live, isn't it? But when we understand guilt in relation to faith and what it means to be a Christian and how we can lean on the Father to know that He can take those things away, who better to talk to than God Himself? But also at the same time, it's easy for us to pray for someone who's lost a loved one, isn't it? We can bow our heads and say, Lord, please help this person get through this. This person that's bereaving, you know, help them, you know, be strong and courageous and lean upon You and go to Your Word and all these things that we can say eloquently in prayers because we love and we care for that person. But when it comes to our own personal prayer, many times people have told me, Larry, I feel selfish asking God for those things. Because it was my fault to begin with, so how can I ask God for help when I'm the one who caused it? Aren't we the same ones who caused the sin? And we ask God for forgiveness, and we ask God for help, and we ask Him to relieve the guilt and help me take this burden away. So in that moment of that neurotic guilt of what we need to express, sometimes the hardest person to talk to is God Himself. Because in that, we don't really know what to say. And we don't want to say, Lord, please take this pain away in my heart. You know, because I'm obviously the one who caused this pain, so please take it away. But in that moment of expressing ourselves to God, it's interesting that we're never at our most vulnerable than when we bow our head in prayer. And that's what we need to be. We need to be at our most vulnerable when we're talking to the Father. And it doesn't need to be these and thous, and it doesn't need to feel eloquent, and it doesn't need to feel like it, well, I couldn't say that prayer before the church. Just talk to Him. Cry for it. Tell Him to help you. Pound the table and tell Him you're mad. Ask Him why these things happen. Lord, help me understand this. Help me not to have these feelings. And in all of those things, not only are you expressing emotions, but you're also getting it off your chest. And when we go through grief and when we go through guilt, the best thing that we can do is talk about it. Because if we don't, what happens is we become filled with anger and resentment. Gradually, we move up out of depression, and we get through that, and we begin to see perhaps just a ray of sunshine, even if it's but for a moment. And when we're able to express some of the strong feelings, and we begin to say, well, maybe it wasn't my fault, or maybe I can get through this, then something happens, or something triggers it, or somebody says something to make you mad. I heard somebody say to a lady one time, there was a young boy when we were living in Alabama, and he was riding his four-wheeler home. I think he was 7 or 8 years old, and he went through a little creek ravine thing there, and he turned too quick sideways, and there was only about 2 feet of water. But as he turned, he dumped the four-wheeler over, and he drowned in 2 feet of water. Because it pinned him under it. I was preaching for a little small congregation in Fayette County at the time, and they had the funeral there, and there was another preacher at the Barry congregation who did the funeral, Brother Norman. And I remember it's a wonderful sermon, but afterwards, as they were standing there and they were taking the family in the fellowship hall, because the cemetery was right, literally right across the road, and they were preparing the gravesite. And all of these people are coming in with well intentions. I heard one lady say, well, at least he was young and you can have another one. Can you imagine how angry you would be if somebody said that to you? Can you imagine how much you would resent that person? Though in their mind it was simply with good intentions. We want the best, obviously, for someone who's experiencing grief, but with that comes the resentment and the anger of knowing of the loved one that you lost. And again, she blamed herself later because she felt only had she been there. I mean, he rode between his grandparents' house and their house 100 times. So what was different about this time? So I'm sure the anger and the resentment was there. You know, anger is something in grief that has to be confessed. It's got to be confessed. And we've got to allow that anger to be expressed. You know, a lot of times people say, well, you need to bottle that anger up. Doesn't the Bible say something about, you know, anger is good in relation to as long as we're not sinning? You know, anger is good if it's expressed. Jesus expressed anger over the money changers, didn't he? So as long as we're not doing it in a way that we're going to be sinning, that anger's got to be expressed and that anger has to come out. You know, see, when we've had something precious that's taken from us, we're mad. This was mine. This belonged to me. How dare they take this away from me? So that resentment and that anger has to be expressed. You know, we might be hostile towards the doctor. The doctor, you should have done something. Why didn't you give her more medication? Why didn't you operate? Or why did you not operate? We begin to kind of go through this process of trying to rationalize all of these things. So we're angry over anything we think over one particular moment that might have caused the death of that person or the loss of that relationship. And we're mad over it. And sometimes you just want to pound the table and you just want to shout and say, why? Those things are okay, and you need to express those emotions. And sometimes we need to say why, you know? We need to be able to yell, and we need to be able to kick and shout, and sometimes in our doubt of expressing towards God why these things are happening, this is a part of our own soul growing. Because in that, as we come through that process of being angry and resentful, as we see that things will get better, we begin to look up again, and God has always been there. He's been there every single step of the way. He's never left me. He's never forsaken me. I've pointed the finger at Him. I've been mad at Him. But He's never turned His back on me. But in that haze of anxiety and resentment and anger, we don't see clearly and we don't see God. Right? You see, no matter what happened, God has always been standing next to me. Right there the whole time. You know, this type of attitude, you know, a lot of people question and say, well, Larry, you know, can we really question God? Read the Bible. Great men of faith questioned God. Moses himself questioned, God, are you sure you got the right person? Because I'm not the man to lead these people out of Egypt. That's not me. What did God say? Every time anybody's ever questioned, what did He say? I'll help you. When Moses questioned, what did he say? I'll give you Aaron. He'll help you. You're not going to do it alone. Lord, I'm not eloquent of speech. He's going to help you along. I'll give you the words to say. So in all of that, when we don't see Him, He's there. And because we're questioning and we're trying to process and we're trying to understand, we forget to say, Lord, help me. In all of that, we question everything, but we never say, help me. Lord, help me. Help me understand. Help me process this. Lord, because I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. And in that, to bow our heads and express those ideas and thoughts and anger and all of that stuff at God and let Him help us walk through that. You know, you think about Psalm 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for Thou art with me. Thy rod and Thy staff, they comfort me. You know, I think about what David went through and his sin and losing his children and his family and all of these things, that in all of that in Psalm 22, as we look at the Psalm, the Passion Psalm, as David is struggling this, and obviously we see it in relation to Christ, but David is struggling and he's asking God, you know, all of these people are, they're compassed about me, and God, You've forsaken me, and why are all of these things happening? He's doing what we have to do. That we need to express those emotions and get that anger out and talk about it and be resentful and say, why, Lord, do these things have to happen to me? But as you talk through that, and as we get into Psalm 23, David finally just kind of shakes his head and says, I just never asked Him for help and said, He's who I need. I pointed the finger at Him and I've asked Him why He did this and why did You allow these things to happen to me, but I never asked Him for help in all of that. But then when David finally says, even when I'm walking through all of these trials and troubles, when the clouds are extremely dark and I can't see the sun, Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. David said, Lord, You've always been there. And when you think about what David went through, we might say, well, he deserved it. He's the cause of it, right? And certainly we know we all deserve the cross, but Jesus went through it for us. But God never said that to us. Though we're the cause of why He went there, God said, I'll put somebody there else instead. I'll help you through that sin. I'll put My Son on the cross so you don't have to feel the pain. Just ask Me for help. And that's what He did. But in that stage, as we're struggling, as we're filled with anger and we're filled with resentment, we've got to express it. And it's okay to express those things. It's okay to be mad. Because if we don't get those things out, they bottle up and it affects our relationships with other people. Somebody asks us how we're doing. We've got all that anger pent up inside of us and somebody asks us how we're doing. I'm not doing good today. How do you think I'm doing? I just lost the person I love beyond anything else in this life. How do you think I'm doing? I've actually had somebody say that to me. I felt about that big. Well, probably aren't doing too good, are you? But in that, we have to express it, because if not, it's going to affect other things that we do. Stage 7, we resist returning. Why do you think that is? Although we might be kind of well along in our process of grieving, you know, maybe we think we're doing well, and you know, maybe I'm going to church more, and I haven't worked in about 4 or 5 weeks, and finally I decided to, you know, try work for a few days, and you know, it seems to kind of be coming back together. And in our grief, what we really need to do is get back to our usual activities. We need to be forced to do things perhaps we didn't want to do previously over the last several weeks or months, or however long that process of grief might be. Because we need some normality back in our lives, right? You know, our loss has been something special. And we feel that if we go back out into reality, people just aren't going to understand what that person meant to me. You know, you don't know how much I loved him or her, or you don't know how much I cherish that relationship, or you don't know how much it hurts because I miss my child because I don't get to see them anymore, or you don't know how much it hurts to, you know, watch a loved one die because of Alzheimer's and to say the long goodbye. You don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. And I know it hurts you. But as much as that hurts, you've got to step outside. We've got to get back to a normality of life. Though we're never going to be the person we used to be. And maybe we even think people have forgotten my tragedy, right? You know, there was a lady whose husband had died. They'd been married for 40 years. He died suddenly. Some friends had finally talked her into going out to dinner with some other friends, and even a few of his friends that he had worked with and played golf with. And so finally she said, okay, I need to get out. I need to be around people. And as they're sitting around dinner, his friends are talking about a particular golf game, and he begins to express a particular story that her husband did, and then he sees her across the table, and he stops. And he doesn't say anything else. But at that moment, as he begins to talk about him, she kind of perks up a little bit. But then he says, oh, I'm sorry. And he doesn't mention anything else. And nobody else at the table says anything about her husband. They don't love him like I love him. They don't understand. They won't even talk about him anymore. So to this person, they're not only resentful, but why go in a world where nobody wants to remember who he was? Because he was everything to me. You know, he was my life. He's all I knew. And nobody wants to talk about it. I always find it interesting whenever I, you know, go visit someone who's lost a loved one, and the friends are there and the family's there, and sometimes they're laughing, talking about stories of the one they lost or what they lost, and they're laughing and having a good time. And that lasts for, you know, 2 or 3 days. And then nobody talks about him anymore. And we come to church and they don't want to mention him. You know, and in that, why we resist returning is because we think they forgot him. And I don't want to forget him, so I'm not going back into the world. Because if I stay here, the memories are there, right? So this is where I'm going to stay, tucked away in my corner, because this is what I know. And I have my memories, and I'm going to be okay. But what I tell people in that, you know, we kind of conduct this quiet conspiracy against mentioning the person because we're so afraid we're going to hurt their feelings. But the greatest thing that you can do in that moment is talk about them. Ask them about that person. Do you remember that time? You know, I've always considered it a privilege when folks have asked me to do the funeral of their loved one. In many of those cases, I don't know the person at all. I don't. And to me, sometimes those are easier. And let me tell you why. Because when I walk into the house, I need to know the person that I'm talking about. I know nothing about them. Never met them before. Know nothing about them. Perhaps I've seen them in passing. We've talked here and there. In many cases, I know nothing about them. But the greatest joy for me is to sit down in the middle of the family when I pull them together and I just let them talk. And tears are flying and laughing and anger and all of these things are coming out because I've asked about the person they love. And don't we want to talk about that which we love the most? Don't we? Like Jesus, we want to talk about Jesus because we love Jesus, because of what He did for us. But don't we want to, you know, talk about those people that we love the most, and don't we want people to remember them because they're special to us? So don't shy away from asking somebody, not only if how they're doing, but bringing up a memory or letting them talk about the person. Because in that, they need to return and they need to know reality didn't forget their loved one. Because their loved one matters. Because they're not going to return if they think they don't matter. And so it's okay for us to talk about those things. It's not a taboo. You know, we don't have to have this conspiracy against it. You know, many people that are grieving, and if you've grieved, you know that you're very conscious of other people. You don't want to affect somebody else. You know, you don't, perhaps you don't want to cast your feelings upon them because, you know, you don't think that's fair to them. So we have this quiet conspiracy not to say anything at all, and they're conscious about us, so nothing is said, so all of these feelings are pent up, and the anger is there, so they're going to resist going back into normality of life, and they just say, forget it. The quality of our personal interest in these people can demonstrate to them our love for them, but also that we want to hear their burdens. Galatians 6:2, right? How can I bear your burden if I don't ask what your burden is? How can I help you carry that load if I don't know what you're carrying? So it's okay to say, I miss them too. When I was privileged for just a short period of time when I first moved to Fayette to preach, that I was Sister Jane McWhorter's gospel, I was her preacher. And some of you ladies probably know who Sister McWhorter is. Wonderful. Wonderful lady. But one of the things I remember about her was always her concern for other people. Always. But I remember what she said, though, and if you didn't know her husband, Brother Don McWhorter, great gospel preacher for many, many years, preached in Fayette for many years and did the television program there. But I remember her saying of how she remembered Don was that she would spray her pillow with his cologne at night and she would put in one of his sermons and that's how she would go to sleep. You know, some people try and push away the memories because they hurt too bad. She said to push away the memories hurts too bad. So she said, that's my way of grieving. Every night on that pillow I cry, but I can smell him and I can hear him. But what she said, what she always enjoyed the most was when people would come up and say, boy, I sure do miss Brother Don's preaching. Boy, he was a great gospel preacher. He sure did help me many times. To her, she said that many mattered. And people didn't forget him. So it's okay to talk about the people they've lost. It's even okay to say, you know what, this hurts me too. That's not being selfish, but to say, I don't know your pain, but I hurt too, because I miss them too. So for us to push past, we've got to be able to return. We've got to be able to go back into the world and know the world is not going to be the same, but that it's okay to talk about it. But stage 8, like I said, gradually that hope is going to come through, I promise. Sometimes it might seem dim, but when we get that little glimpse of hope in one experience or another, That cloud might seem extremely dark, and it might break up for just a moment. But that small ray of sunshine is your hope that it's going to be okay. You're never going to get over the grief of the one that you've lost or what you've lost. Never. But what you will learn to do is cope with it each day. Tomorrow will be better than the last. Next week will be better than the previous week. And sometimes there are small victories. Today I actually went out to the store and was able to buy some things. The first time I've driven in weeks, but I was able to finally go to the store. That's a victory. That's a ray of sunshine. I've been able to slowly face the problems that I know because he's not there anymore, because she's not there, whatever it is, they're not there. But slowly I can face those situations. But we've got to never quit, no matter how long we might think that grief is going to last. Because that gradually that hope is going to come through. Sometimes in that ray of sunshine, and sometimes when hope seems to be going well for us, that anniversary of their death comes around, that holiday that they were so present in comes around, or the day that it happened comes around, or a special anniversary comes back. They come around every year, don't they? Many times it's in those moments that you'll see people seclude themselves again into their own private thoughts. Maybe they're trying to remember and to make it special. Some people push forward and they want other people to remember that particular day. You know, I love it when I've had widows that will come up to me and say, tomorrow would have been me and John's, you know, 55th wedding anniversary. And I say, isn't that wonderful? And I say, what would you have done on your 55th wedding anniversary? Oh, well, he would have tried to cook, but he was a horrible cook. But he at least tried to cook for me. And you see a smile come across their face and know that they can face that day, though it's not going to be easy, but it means that we didn't forget and they didn't forget. Sometimes those days are extremely hard. I'm not going to say they're not. And they're hard to process and go through. But in that, what I always try and tell people is, take the good that you remember about that person. If it's an anniversary, if it's a birthday, if it's a special holiday, whatever it is, take what you remember about that person and talk about it. If you have children, talk about that moment with them. Because in that, through laughter, tears are easier to process, aren't they? You know, God gave us tear ducts for a reason. We've got to use them. And it's okay to cry in those moments to remember, because God helps us to grieve because we don't want to forget. Though we try diligently sometimes because we think, if I can forget, it's not going to hurt so bad. Brethren, I'll tell you this, it's always going to hurt. It's always going to hurt. The pain will always be there. Perhaps it's not as great as it was yesterday or the week before. But the pain is there. And as you learn to cope with it and deal with it, it's the kind of the thorn in Paul's side sometimes. Remember what Paul, he said, please, Lord, just take it out. But at that, Paul understood there was a reason for it. And sometimes in our pain comes laughter and tears of joy in remembering the one we've loved, because we don't want to forget them. But that hope, I promise you, that hope is going to come through. But finally, in stage 9, sometimes what begins to happen is that we struggle to affirm reality. Please understand this, although this is, you know, what I say is the final stage, doesn't mean we become our old selves again. Because you're probably never going to be your old self again. You know, maybe you're going to look at things differently. Maybe you're going to process things differently. Maybe you're going to treat people differently. Whatever the case is, we don't come out or come through grief as the same person. Because when we go through this and we come out as different people, you know, depending upon the way we respond to the event, either we're going to be stronger people in our faith or we're going to be weaker in our faith. And sometimes people grow in their faith as they're going through this process. They begin to lean upon God more. They see life is fleeting and they understand it's going to be different. And maybe this makes me change now because I understand how small and fleeting life is that James talks about in James chapter 4. And sometimes you see those individuals who completely turn their back on God because they've never moved past the stage of anger and resentment. They have to process it in their own way. You can never force individuals to go through grief. They have to, and we can help them, but they have to take that road alone. You see, people who learn, you know, during grief to rely on God fully don't feel the future as being alone. Because they know as they get through this, and sometimes, you know, as you've gone through the grieving process, you feel alone. But if your strength is growing and your soul is being nourished, as you go through that, and as you come through the other side, and as the clouds begin to open up, God has been standing there, right? So because your faith is strong, you know fully, I don't have to face any of this by myself. I don't have to. Because I know that God has been there the whole time. He's never forsaken me. He's never given up on me. And those that have mature faith give evidence of an uncommon relationship with God. And I had a gospel preacher friend of mine, I think I've mentioned this before, who lost his grandson in a tragic car accident. And through his struggles and through his faith, my faith increased. Because I saw how he handled it. He says, Larry, that doesn't mean that I didn't struggle with it. It doesn't mean that I didn't ask questions. I just learned more in that. He said, I thought I was a strong Christian. He said, I really wasn't as strong as I thought I was. Because it made me question a lot of things about who I was. But in that, as I saw him grow, he helped me grow. Because I saw how he looked at it. So sometimes we have to get a different perspective on things. I've come to see that this way of looking at life makes an amazing difference in the way we experience grief. How do we view God in our relationship now is probably how I'm going to view God as I go through the grief process. But as I go through this, I'm probably going to view Him differently on the other end. Lord willing, it's going to be in a different way because I'm going to be stronger and perhaps I'll have just a slight understanding. But sometimes there are those who struggle and say, God did this to me, God made this happen, so therefore I don't want any part of them. And that breaks my heart to see that. But at the same time, you understand the pain they're going through. But if we go through with a process of maturity and understanding that through these trials and temptations that James talks about in James 1, verses 2 through 4, when James says, brethren, count it all joy when you fall into these difficult situations. Knowing that the trying of your faith is going to work patience. Whoa, patience. We need patience when we grieve. Knowing that the trial of your faith is going to work patience, but let patience have its perfect work that you may be entire wanting nothing. Because in that, James says, you have God helping you through it. I'm always thankful for those, not for the loss, but for those who are Christians who have God to lean on. Because in those moments, when you hear atheists ask God why, you know there's a God in heaven. And God can help us get us through those things. We've got to carry that grief. Yes, it's difficult. You know, people through the centuries have found new and unexpected strength in the words that Jesus talks about in Matthew 28 as He gave the Great Commission. He said, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. So He's always there. He's always present. And as we begin to kind of, you know, struggle to affirm reality, we find that we don't need to be afraid of the real world. I've got to get back to some form of normalcy. I've got to step back into the world. I've got to face the difficulties of knowing the person that I loved is not there, and I'm never going to see them again. But through that, if my faith is what it needs to be and I've relied on God through the process, I can stand out there and I can look up and I can bask in the rays as the clouds depart and go away. And in that, I can know that God has been with me through all of it. And I always like that picture. I know we've all seen it 100 times of the footprints in the sand. The guy that's complaining, and God, where were you when I went through this? And what about this? And finally God says, I'm the one who was carrying you the whole time. God's always there carrying us, brother. He's always there carrying us. So when those dark clouds begin to break up, and for that brief moment that ray of sunlight comes through, and though we continue to struggle, we affirm reality in knowing that God has been there the whole time. I certainly hope as we've looked at these stages, they've helped you to kind of understand, again, a small portion of the process that we go through. And all of us, again, will experience that process differently than the other person. And sometimes people will go from step 2 to stage 5. From stage 5 back to stage 3. But in that, as long as we're progressing through grief and learning to cope with grief and get through grief, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I promise you it's going to be okay. If you'll keep your faith and your church family with you and those who love you and allow them to help you, you'll get through it. Because we don't have to do it alone. Though I need to walk that road by myself because I have to experience it for myself, it doesn't mean that people can't walk with me and hold my hand. And sometimes that's all people need, is simply for us to put out their hand and say, let me walk with you. All right, well, let's tell you what. Let's go ahead and Gene asked me if I'd say a word of prayer. And then we'll be dismissed. We'll go downstairs. We'll eat lunch. Enjoy some fellowship. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to ask. Then we'll come back up at 1, and I usually open it up for some questions and answers. Sometimes people ask questions, sometimes they don't. If you want to express something or tell a story, please do. Because sometimes that helps other people to know that they're not alone, and it helps us to get those things off of our chest, to know that our experiences are unique and different than everybody else's, but that helps us in the healing process. And then with that, after that, and after we've expressed what we want to or ask or talk about, I'll talk a few moments just about some etiquette and things we should say and things we shouldn't say, just to kind of help us, to help those who are grieving. And then after that, I promise to get you out of here by 2 o'clock. I know you guys have other things to do, but I'm certainly glad that you're here today and that you've chosen to be here. And I hope these things have helped you and maybe helped you to understand just a little bit of how to better deal with. Things in life happen, and things we don't understand, and things we question, and those things that we're angry at, those things that we truly don't understand. We know that you were there with us each and every step of the way. Father, we thank you for loving us. We thank you for allowing us to lean upon you. We thank you for allowing us to be your children and to walk with you. We're thankful for your son who also struggled with grief and sorrow as well as he went through that pain and agony for all of us at Calvary. Thankful that you loved us enough to give into us. Father, we're thankful for this day and for this seminar, and we certainly pray that